is brought to you by GloryGiftStore.com. At GloryGiftStore.com, we offer the very latest in quality Christian supplies, from DVDs and books to Bibles in every translation, communion, jewelry, T-shirts, clergy robes, and even homeschooling supplies are also available. GloryGiftStore.com, where you'll find everything to meet your Christian needs. So stop by GloryGiftStore.com today. That's GloryGiftStore.com.
Shout out to GloryGiftStore.com. Been sponsoring us for about going on 4 weeks now, and they've been great. So stop by there today if you get a chance. GloryGiftStore.com website. And if you type in Choose to Joy in the promotional code bar, you get 15% off any product, and they have everything Christian that you need. And get you a good, clean Christian movie tonight. It's cold in Nashville. You get you a good movie. Sit back and watch it with your family. this has been just an amazing week. It's been very interesting. It's bringing back a lot of memories. Some, I guess, we kind of wish we forgot. You know, some we thank God that we've moved past it, but just for testimonial purpose and to let people know, man, jail is real, it's tough, and there's consequences to breaking the law. And then, to take it a step further, where it's enlightening once you get set up in the system and you see what really goes on behind closed walls, I would say. But without further ado, my best friend, my ace, I've been knowing him since before he was born. Let me bring Mr. Trey Gupton on. Trey, you there?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Man, we got a 30-minute show today, so let's just hop right on into it. I think yesterday we stopped. We was talking about, what were we talking about? Do you remember?
It was so much, man. I'm not sure where we stopped. We talked about a lot of my experience first day going in and stuff. In those first several weeks, just my perception on myself and being there, my perception, I guess, on my charges, marijuana itself, drug use, talked about a little bit about the system and imprisonment and war on drugs. We talked about quite a bit, man. We kind of got into a little bit of a lot.
What was kind of intriguing to me is that you feel like all drugs should be legal in America, all of them. Just legalize them all. And you believe that by doing that, that would get the goal of just less people would use drugs.
Yeah, I believe that, you know, I guess first I always like to preface saying that with my intention is the exact same as anybody's who would oppose that position, which I would understand why they would. I just think their reasoning and more so just the information they have is flawed, but it's for the purpose that the effects of drug use would lessen just in terms of crime, in terms of sickness and disease, in terms of actual use, and in terms of prison, and in terms of dollars and the finances of our country and what we spend on it, on the taxpayer. So just in every way imaginable, the outcome is so much better when you decriminalize it. And I mean, I want to make it clear that decriminalizing and making a drug legal is not the same as no regulation. There's lots of things that are harmful that are legal but have regulations around them. And you make even those harmful things much safer to use, especially given the fact that a lot of drugs, they're going to be used anyway. And so,
yeah.
But even the use itself, it's been shown to drop when you decriminalize, and you can actually deal with, you know, the issues behind why people use it. And usually when people use stuff or get caught in the system that they get caught in makes them much more likely to use again or to sell again or whatever the case may be. So, yeah, we can get into some of the nuts and bolts and data behind why I say that if you want. But that's why I say that. It's not just a feeling about drugs, that I'm pro all drug use or I'm some sort of hippie. I don't use any drugs or alcohol myself at all, personally, like we said before, but it's just what I know about it. And
if somebody out there, because I would like to hear somebody really give a good reason why what you're saying is incorrect. And I'm not saying you're correct or incorrect, but I would like to hear the other side. So if somebody could maybe explain why legalizing drugs would not be the best thing for this country, reach me at blogtalkradio.com/choosetojoy and leave a message, or you can look me up on Facebook, Eric Roberts. Should be easy to find, but send me a message. So I would like to get somebody on here who would say why that would not be the best idea. Let me ask you this, Trey. So say if drugs became legal and the big spending and the big funding on the war on drugs, which I don't really get that. I mean, if we're fighting a war against drugs, we have been losing that battle for the last 10 years. Because who's winning that battle? How do you win a war on drugs? You know. But let me ask you this before we get into that. Because I know you're going to go in on that right there. Say we did end. Say we just legalized all the drugs. And say we stop criminalizing drug dealers and things like that. Do you believe that would have some kind of effect on the economy? Where, because as we found out, there's a lot of institutions making a lot of money off of imprisonment, and not just the big money, not just the big corporations like CCA, but all the workers who work for CCA or all the people that work for jails and prisons?
Well, to answer your question, the effect on the economy would be overwhelmingly positive. Any losses in jobs, and not to say that there wouldn't be some and there needs to be some, would absolutely get ate up by the creation of new jobs. And I think it's important to mention that, the jobs that you're talking of here are supported jobs. It is the citizens of the United States that are paying for the war on drugs. All of the money that goes into the pockets of individuals working for companies like CCA, or whether it be a commissary company, whatever the case may be, this is funded by taxpayers. The government has to take the money from us in order to pay these companies or institutions to do what they do. But just to overall summarize, you could look at it on a broader, I guess, macroeconomic scale. And I looked at some figures. These figures are a little old, maybe a couple years old, but they're pretty relevant. Like, as of 2013, we were spending upwards of $51 billion a year in our war on drugs
in the United States.
So you're talking about $51 billion is what we spent on just the war on drugs. During that time, in 2013 alone, there were 1.5 million people arrested for nonviolent drug offenses. In 2013, there was 2.2 million people in prison in the United States. That's more in number, ratio, percentage than any other country. Like, we outdo, like, Russia and China and Iran. It's pretty bad, but now that's, on the macro scale, you're talking about $50 billion being spent on a war that you're not winning. From 19, I think I read from the late 80s until, in 2012 or 13, the American government seized upwards of 4 million pounds of cocaine. Now, there's only several ways to fight your war on drugs. There's eradication, when you try to actually do away with the drugs themselves or intercept the drugs themselves. There's the deterrent of criminal, of making it illegal to deter people from wanting to sell or participate in that. And then there's actual criminal prosecution. You lock and imprison people and take them out of society. So those are the only three ways that you can combat, and those are the only three ways that we've done it thus far. And so that's where all this money is going in our war on drugs. But if you look at that, you would think 4 million pounds of cocaine, that's a lot. But during that period of time, it has done nothing to reduce the amount of cocaine available. Actually, if you look at street prices, they've fallen over that 20-year gap. So that means that there's more supply out there and the price has fallen. It hasn't been harder to get. It's been easier to get. And so then if you look at the swing side of that, you know, they have estimates, and again, this is coming from, not from Trey, but like the CBO, which is like the Congressional Budget Office. They estimate that if all drugs were legalized and taxed at rates comparable to substances like alcohol and tobacco, that the intake would be almost $47 billion in tax revenue. So you're talking about a $100 billion swing from spending 50-some billion to not having to spend it to making almost $50 billion. And so, and then when you look at, like I said, there's a lot of this going on already. If you just take, you know, and it's going to go this way eventually. It's going to be a mute point at some point because we're headed this way slowly but surely. Southern states like us will probably be, you know, further behind. But it's legal in, I think, almost 19 states in some way. I think in 4 of them just completely decriminalized and recreational use is allowed. And, again, not that I'm for recreational use. I'm just talking about for the purpose of having the best outcome. This is why I say that this would be, and then when you go to look at the disease part of it, you know, a third of all the HIV cases in the United States stem from people sharing syringes doing drugs. And so when you go to places that have decriminalized it, see, when you have something that's criminalized, there's no regulating it. There's no quality standards. There's none of that. And so that's one of the first things they recognize in countries where they regulated it and decriminalized it, that those unnecessary health costs and disease and deaths don't even happen no more. And then we don't even get to the actual criminal part of it where people are dying over drug wars. And, you know, I think in Mexico I read 100,000 people have died in the war on drugs between the cartels and the government and all this stuff. And all of this is just because it's illegal. Same thing with alcohol. Nobody, you don't never hear of nobody dying over an alcohol sale or something.
Man, so if you legalize drugs, do you think that would that just kill the cartel?
Well, what would happen is that more efficient business would begin to take place and eventually erode their business, unless they, you know, I guess change their model and became real formidable businesses. You know what I'm saying? I mean, ultimately, you're going to have companies like Pfizer and Philip Morris and all these farms. You know, big money is going to come and get into it, as we've seen before. When you legalize something, it happens over and over again, just like you see in alcohol today. You don't see mobsters running around, you know, smuggling in liquor and alcohol and all that. It's run by companies, and they're not killing each other over territory or property, you know. So it's eventually business and the economics of it would take hold, and the most efficient business would win out, which is not going to be criminal in the end. And so, yes, it eventually would either force them to adopt real efficient business practices, or they would just they would get knocked out of business.
Wow. Woo, man, that's just, it's a big conversation, man, and it's, you know, everything you're saying to me kind of makes logical sense in a sense, but I mean, if you legalize drugs, do you believe you'll have more people using drugs, more people addicted to, especially drugs like heroin and cocaine and crack? Can you imagine legalizing crack?
No, I think that's, you know, I could speak on that on a practical level. No, it's just not the case. Like I said, when we've done this before, this experiment is already taking place in the United States with certain drugs, and it's already taking place in other countries with all drugs. And, you know, the data's in. It's just an irrefutable point that it's not the case. Anybody who wants to smoke weed right now is doing it. They don't have to. It's not a barrier of illegality that's stopping a lot of people. And it's the
same.
My dad was a drug addict
for years, you know. And I see what it does. So if you can get that at the store, you know, I mean, does that not feel like a little bit too much? Because people are drinking alcohol today. I mean, it's going bananas.
They are, man.
People are getting drunk every day.
You know, so, you know, if crack is made available at the...
Well, here's the thing. Number one is that, again, like you, I am not pro-crack use.
To make that clear.
You know what I'm saying? But again, you know, people are going to have to go do their own research, and I know it can be a hard bullet to bite. It, you know, it seems, in a sense, counterintuitive, but if you understand human psyche and economics and health issues, you understand that what I'm saying really is the truth. The addiction rate goes down. And then the thing that goes along with that that I have to say as well is that, you know, the people that use this stuff, like I shared, I think, in one of our earlier episodes, man, it has a whole lot to do with environment. It's not just straight up addiction. People start stuff, especially things like crack and heroin, for a reason. And it has everything to do with their environment and their lifestyle and what they're in. And generally what happens with this system of criminalizing it, you just make it so much more likely that a person is going to reoffend, reuse, because the taboo of it and what it locks them out of, and, you know, and I can get into a whole another conversation about that, but, you know, and then along with the human psyche, a lot of things, people have a draw to it because it's illegal. It's like your daughter. Like, if you walk into a room, she might not be thinking about a certain toy. And you walk in and say, Ellen, you don't touch that toy. Now, all of a sudden, man, her focus is honed in on that toy, man. It's just like, now she has this drive towards this toy. And so, man, we all work that way. It's part of our psyche, and that's part of the business of drugs being illegal. You're not keeping people from it anyway. You're just making it more of a taboo, and it's not in any way beneficial. It's a war you cannot win that way. You cannot win it. And again, like I said, I want to make clear that, again, I'm not saying open season, everybody should just be able to use. I'm saying this is only for the reason that I know from just data and research that this is what actually produces a healthier community, is when you don't criminalize and prosecute people for something that's actually an ailment. If you go use crack or heroin, you have an ailment. You know what I'm, something is wrong, yeah, in your life. You know what I'm saying? And that's not something to be criminalized. That should be something that needs to be addressed. And if you criminalize it and prosecute that person, you're pretty much guaranteeing that they're going to continue to have an issue with that everything that's going to come along with what they're up against in society after that fact. And so, man, that's why I say all that. I mean, there's so many reasons behind it, so much data behind it, man. It's really, and then, like I said, if we just talked about the failure of what we're doing now alone, you could knock out that this doesn't work at all.
Yeah, whatever's going on now, for sure it doesn't work. And I'm not sure, you know, like I said, I was most of the time in my mind, I'm on the side of, you know, I'm on the side of the law, and on, you know, obey the law, which I was on the side of the system, and you know, so to speak. I mean, not in everything, of course, but you know, being involved with this thing with you and with Dad and with people, other people close, it seems like a system that is, it doesn't work, but it's almost like it's made to not work. I mean, it almost seems like it's money based. It seems real dirty. Why is most of the focus? Why is most of the focus with drugs to lock up the dealers and put them away for such a long time? That kind of confuses me. I mean, the users, I guess if you don't have any users, you won't have any dealers.
Yeah, but that would be too much like right, Eric. Yeah, that would be too much like right, though, Eric. So, I mean, what you're saying is accurate. You know, if you really want to address a problem, you want to get to the root cause and not spend a lot of your money and effort attacking symptoms. But, and so we're doing the opposite of that. You know, as long as there's a demand.
Yeah, because of the users.
Because there's a demand. Yeah, as long as there's a demand, there's going to be dealers. You're not going to out.
It's never
going to
stop.
And so by dealing with taking the criminal element away from it and actually dealing with the root cause of addiction and the drugs themselves and regulating them, bringing them above board where it can be seen, a lot of the reasons, I mean, we can't even deal with this stuff is because it's not even legal to really do research on it. They don't even know a lot about marijuana because they can't get a lot of legal research because it's illegal. So, there's so much money tied up into it, man, and it's so twisted and convoluted. But ultimately, like I said, the war on drugs has ended up being, I don't want to put an accusation on, you know, any group of people or make it sound like it was necessarily like a conspiracy from the beginning, but ultimately it's just become this systematic locking up and disenfranchisement of young black people.
Let me ask you this, and then I want to talk a little bit about some of the things you dealt with in jail, speaking of dealing, the segue. But I want to ask you this first. Who loses? Okay, who loses? If we legalize all drugs, we stop the war on drugs and stop mass incarceration, who loses if we stop that?
There's a handful of people that lose, and those are the people that are making money off of the system. And so mostly you're talking about lawyers, attorneys, private prison corporations. There's interesting that I read that, you know, from the 1970s or so up until, you know, recently, violent crime in America has actually gone down. It's actually gone down pretty dramatically in terms of, I'm talking about rapes, robberies, murders. If you look at major cities across the U.S., it's actually gone down. While prison population and incarceration has skyrocketed.
Oh, man.
And so, you know, that seems like a correlation that should not take place, but the answer to that is the war on drugs. When they, in the 80s, when they started passing these draconian sentences and mandatory minimums for drug offenders, then you found a way to continue to incarcerate massive amounts of people and not for things that were violent anymore. And so the losers would be, you know, the company. Then you have to understand there are companies, they're vested and they're interested in making sure these laws stay what they are because they have contracts with the states, you know, like CCA, who operates here and in other states. Man, they have a contract with Tennessee that says that Tennessee has to provide them with a certain amount of prisoners to fill up their facility. And so
it just doesn't make sense to me. So the CCA fold if the war on drugs ends and all drugs are legal?
Yeah, largely becomes significantly less profitable at the very least because, like I said, man, like I said, 1.5 million people were locked up in 2013 for nonviolent drug offenses. Almost 700,000 of those were marijuana offenses. And so, you know, while most of those don't go to jail for marijuana, you know, like I said, once you get in that system, man, you could go if you had prior. So if you go several times during that same cycle, you're going to go. Eventually, they know they're going to get you. And so these companies, man, they lobby. They spend money lobbying Congress and our lawmakers to make sure that the laws stay in favor of what are going to keep their prisons full, so they can keep getting dollars from the state. And what I'm saying is that what a lot of even people who might not would agree with me now, you know, conservative Republican lawmakers are starting to see it just on a financial basis, that our country's spending a tremendous amount of money and not getting any return for it in this war on drugs if we say the real reason is for actually helping and producing a safer society. But we know that that's not the case because it doesn't produce that. And so
let me ask you
there's losers, but they need to lose.
Let me ask you this, though, because this is what, man, for lack of a better word, that this is what concerns me. People care. Does the public care? And I feel like, Trey, if I haven't went through this experience with you guys and really kind of saw what was going on, maybe I wouldn't even care. Do people care?
Well, Eric, here's the deal. Here's the deal. And this might be offensive to some people, but I strongly believe it's the truth. Like, we are increasingly becoming a nation of idiots. So I don't think people care enough to even be informed about this stuff unless it comes and knocks on your front door. And so people, I mean, our news organizations, what people know about, I mean, you could, people know more about who's on American Idol and probably don't even have a, can't name three senators, don't have a clue what laws are being passed. They're just not civically involved because they don't really see the correlation in what laws happen and the direction of our country and how it actually affects them, affects their money, affects their tax rate, affects their, you know, job availability. They don't really see the correlation as we did in one time past. You know, the days of having, you know, especially minorities, an informed minority group, you know, in the United States is, I don't want to unfairly speak about them in general because there are, you know, young people doing phenomenal things. But, man, just by and large, in comparison, we're just grossly ignorant about stuff. And so, no, I don't think we do care. And I think it's for that reason. The people that do care, that do stay aware, that do stay informed, that do, you know, vote and that do take part in any of these types of conversations in any meaningful way, they're the people who usually have an interest opposed to our best interest. So, and they find a way to get you to have you think that your interests align with theirs. That's the interesting thing. They do a great job of marketing to actually have you think contrary to your own interest.
Man, we could just talk about this so much more. There's a few other things I want to hit on, but I did title this. Well, I did put in the description that you was going to talk about life in Cali jail. So I want to hit on just one thing, and then we'll shut the show down for today. But I remember the first day you talked about how you got you got locked up, and you did a good job describing what you was going through. And I know my brother. He texted me and said he would have just died. He couldn't have handled none of that. He said, I would die. He said he would have told on people and wouldn't even told the truth. He said he would have got blackballed. But I want to talk about one thing you went through, and I remember you called me. And me and you, we've been boys for a long time, but we never really get have like an emotional, you know, talk. Not that often. If it happens, it maybe been two or three times. You know, we usually, you know, best friends. But I remember you called me one day, and it was after you, I think you talked to your daughter, and for the first time. And if you know Trey, you know that he's been really close. I knew you had been real close to your daughter, and how much you felt about it. You felt that need to be there for her at all times. And this is the first time you've ever been separated for her. And was that the hardest time for you? Was that the hardest it got for you in that first year?
I think there were several moments, man, but this first one here was probably one of the hardest and most acutely painful moments in my life, and I remember it, man, like it was yesterday. I hadn't been long, man, been transferred to the CDC facility, the male housing for that are in jail, man. And I called home to my mom, and she had my daughter because at the time my wife was still incarcerated, and Akilah had gotten past. It had been several days, and it had gotten past the phase where she could really be pacified. She wanted to know where her parents were. She was kind of beside herself. She, you know, and my mama was holding her and rocking her in the chair as they picked up the phone, and Akilah was just crying when I called, and my mama was was crying, but as much as she could to herself, holding Akilah, because there just wasn't much she could do to console her. And I remember her saying, "Akilah, your daddy on the phone." And I spoke to her, and I couldn't get many words out before she just kind of screamed out. And it wasn't like a loud scream, but it was like a heartfelt scream out of her crying, that she screamed, "Daddy, I miss you and I want you." And she was crying while she said it, and it was so intense, man. I remember I was crying at the phone, you know, tears are just pouring from my face. I literally had a puddle on the concrete beneath me, and man, it hurt so bad because there was nothing I could do about it, and I could hear, you know, the pain and sadness and fear in her voice, and I was absolutely powerless to do anything about it, you know, other than pray, which, you know, I mean, I learned later, but I was out. It hurt so much, man, and it broke my heart in a way I had never experienced before. It was the worst kind of heartbreak to hear her say that, and the moment was so intense, and I could not stop it, man. It was nothing that I couldn't do anything about it, man. And man, it hurt me to my heart so bad. And I remember, man, it just was a tough moment. That the phones in county jail are by the window where there's the hallway, and then there's a pod across where you can see into that pod. So guys are always at the window, and most are just doing foolish stuff, throwing up gang signs, seeing their homeboys when I came to jail. Something I just always hated, man. Just almost like a welcome home party. People coming back to jail, they seeing folks they know across the hall, and this dude was at the window in front of me, and he was hollering to his homeboy, which is so stupid because they can't hear you at all. But he's hollering, you know, and saying stuff, man, and he's cussing. I'm on the phone with my daughter, and man, I said, "Hold up, bro, you need to." I'm on the phone, and you know, I said it like, and he took it disrespectfully, which I mean, I kind of meant it the way I said it, because like, I'm literally, he's standing in front of me, like not a foot in front of me, and you yelling, and you see, as all of us is on the phone, it's just the kind of disrespectfulness that goes on in jail, and man, he took real offense to it. And I was so hurt and just so in my feelings at the moment, man. It just wasn't the right time for him to say something to me about that, but he did. He was like, "Well, let's fall in then." Fall in means let's go to the bathroom and let's go on and fight until somebody's on the floor. And so, you know, I usually don't never get caught up in anybody that knows me. It would be very hard to get me in some kind of physical fight. I'm not interested in fighting you. But at the same time, man, you know, not only was he disrespecting me, but it almost felt like he was saying, "Man, screw you and you talking to your daughter. I want to yell and cuss across the hall for my homeboy." And so, man, you know, I said, "Man, you know what? I'm going to be off the phone in a minute. I'm going to come see you." And man, I finished talking to my daughter, and I was so hurt, man, and that hurt can easily, man, it's amazing once you get in some the intensity of any feeling, you can go from that feeling to another one extremely fast.
Right.
So that hurt really got morphed into anger pretty quickly. Because you're already angry to be there. You know, there's a sense of anger that usually comes after that grief anyway. And so, man, and I went to go to step to the guy, and like a lot of guys in county jail, he really wasn't about nothing. He didn't really want to do that. And I was thankful for that because I didn't want to get in trouble. Had we gotten a fight, we probably would have got sent to the hole or something crazy. But, man, that experience, man, was just very, very, it was heavy, man. It was just a heavy emotional day that day. And I do remember calling you shortly after that, man, and I was just in tears, and I was hurt so bad, man. And that was one of the hardest parts for me, man, because I just couldn't stop my daughter's pain. And I did everything I could to handle it the best way possible, to talk to her as much as I could. Sometimes it meant not talking to her. Sometimes just her talking to me on the phone reminded her of where I was, that we weren't together. And so it hurt sometimes, but I couldn't even talk to her as much as I would have liked to. I didn't see her for a long time, man, because we didn't think it was healthy for her to come in there and see me in the orange and go through being, because they pat down kids and everything. And so for 10 months, I didn't even see her. And, man, the Lord actually spoke to my wife, man, and said that it's fine, that it's time, man. Because, you know, for a while, I was just focused on getting out. I had not accepted the idea that I would be in there any longer. And so I didn't see her for 10 months, man, and I remember seeing her the first time in a visit. And, man, her face just lit up. She looked like she saw a ghost. We had never not seen each other for more than a day. And so to go from that to 10 months, man, and then we only had 30 minutes together, man, and it was so hard watching her walk out that door, man. She cried, and I had to not cry until she left. And it broke my heart, man. This stuff, man, is just, you know, it's why you – I would tell guys in there, man, you know, regardless of what I think about the law and legalization, all this stuff, man, you don't need to break the law, because if you do, they got something for you. They got some pain for you, man. You're going to go down through there. And I don't recommend
it. Regardless of how you feel, if the law is right or not right, you stand on the grounds of just obey it, because the consequences is not worth it.
Oh, yeah, I stand on the ground, man. You don't want the consequences. You know, you do not want the consequences, man. If you're going to disobey the law, it needs to be on some, you know, Martin Luther King type tip, like the Civil Rights Action Movement or something. If it's just something about making some money or something like that, you need to forget it, man, because it is not worth the pain it's going to cost you. You know, your family is going to rip your family apart, man, to go through all of that. And I don't think it's right that they do. I think it's wrong. But nevertheless, knowing what it is, that it is what it is, you need to make the right. And like I said, I never thought that all this was even possible to this magnitude, you know, dealing with some marijuana. And I still find that to be absurd. But I tell guys all the time, it's a popular, you know, thing in prison, man. If guys think they're going to get out and, okay, I'm not going to sell cocaine, not going to sell heroin, I'm just going to sell some weed. And I'm like, okay, you do that if you want to, man. But, man, they got something for you. And so, man, I share all this stuff so that people can know, man, and have a respect for the law that I didn't have. Not in the case, you know. I thought something like this could happen if you were doing something pretty heavy, which is why I never. I guess it was heavy looking back, but not with any other substance that I considered, you know, very illicit. But man, it's you need to have a respect for it, man, because that the prison system, man, and jail and separation and what you go through, it's just no joke, man. It's very painful.
Mm-hmm. Very I knew painful. That would be one thing. Just knowing you and your daughter have, especially had, I would say, such a passionate relationship. I mean, you was very passionate about her. She was passionate about you. I mean, I remember at one point you said, man, Akilah's the best thing going right now. And so that separation would be hard. And then when you called me, you know, I could relate to you on a minor scale because you're a grown man and you was talking to your beloved daughter. But I felt hope. I felt like I could helpless. I felt like I couldn't do nothing to help. You know,
yeah,
I couldn't do nothing to help you at that time. I mean, the pain was there. You're locked up and you're separated from your daughter. It's like, man, it just hurt me to see you like that, because it was like, what can you do? So, and you asked me that. You said, man, just love on my daughter for me. You know, I made sure every time I saw her at church, you know, I would love on her. We brought her to the house a few times, and we did as much as we could.
And you know what? And she appreciates that so much, to the fact that you don't know, but every time we go to church now, I have to tell her not to ask you, can she ride home with Uncle Biggie? Because she wants to go every time.
Fuck you, you can't ask every time.
Yeah, she was more than welcome. I told her she was welcome if we didn't have any other plans where, you know, was going over somebody else's house. She's more than welcome. But, man, let's get in the show, man. You got a lot more, man. I mean, how long were you in jail? For about a year and a half in county
jail?
Oh,
no. Oh, in county jail, yeah, a year and 2 months.
And then how long were you in prison?
I went to prison for another year, I think a year and a month or somewhere in there.
Okay, so about 2 years, almost 2 years and a half, close to that. And you've had a lot of experiences. And one, I want to get on, you know, man, Trey, we could literally do this for another week. But I want to talk about how it's like you caught fire, man, and people really started to change. I mean, you would hold Bible studies every night. People was looking forward to it, and all that word was flowing out of your mouth like a river, and it was falling on fertile ground. People was getting changed to the point where I would talk to people to this day, and they would say, man,
they appreciated you ministering to them in the prison, man, and how the Lord was really using you. And they just look forward to it every night. These are men that are locked up in jail, grown men looking forward to Trey leading the Bible study every night. And he manned the Bible study. You know, and so I want to talk about that. And then some things that happened with, you know, with you and your wife. And, I mean, just there's so much we can get into. And then we can stop. We can hop back into the DA and the judge, and just so much. I mean, so much. But thanks for coming on, man. Thanks for doing this much for today, man. And I love you. And we're gonna hop.
Man, I love you. I appreciate the opportunity, man. I really do. I love you. And I'm gonna be available as many days as we can do it until you're ready to move on to something else, man.
Man, awesome. Man. I appreciate it. This is the Choose the Joy broadcast. Incarcerated number 3 with my brother Trey Gupton. Thanks for tuning in. God bless. We are out.